MoneyWeb now on the money.
This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Standing with Sierra Moy, he's a quantitative portfolio manager at Satrix. Sierra, appreciate the time today. Bonds are boring, and that's actually a design feature, not a bug for them. But over the last decade, you put some data out. I think it was to end of February. The local index has actually done slightly better than equities, and of course, at a lower volatility.
Yeah, hi, Simon, and thanks for the show. It's always a pleasure to be invited, and hello to your listeners as well. So, yeah. I'll try and answer your question, the question about bonds being boring, without offending any fixed income managers out there. But I'll definitely not use the word boring, though. I think the concept of bonds is quite misunderstood at times, which is quite unfortunate. So they're very important asset class because they provide a lot of funding for corporates, governments, and all of that. On the other side, they're also tradable, and investors do sometimes get returns that are uncorrelated to equities, which I think is great for diversification within their portfolio. But back to what you mentioned, yes, we have seen the asset class having very good returns. Certainly in the last 10 years, if you look at annual returns, you'll see that the all bond index has hit up around 7.8% returns per annum if you're looking at the end of April. And when you look at the local equities, the all share, it's done 8.1%. So they're a bit tied. There's been a bit of a slowdown in bonds now at the beginning of the year. We can speak about that. But what is even more interesting that is that bonds have had these returns at almost half the volatility an investor would actually experience in local equities.
And that's a key point of bonds, is that they're not nearly as volatile. They move around, but they don't exhibit the volatility we see in equities. Are we still, I mean, you mentioned since the beginning of the year, I mean, one of the big stories is, when do central banks cut? And the expectation was lots this year. Now it's maybe a few. We don't know when those cuts are going to come. We know in time they will. Is there still space for bonds, even in a central bank rate cutting environment?
Yeah, certainly. In fact, in an environment where there's a bit of a pause after a substantial rate hike and a likelihood of a rate cut, bonds can be quite attractive. And it's mainly due to the nature of the beast, which is bonds having this sort of like inverse relationship with the rates. If the central banks would cut rates now, any bonds issued would be written using a lower rate, making the current ones quite attractive, because that's the rate that you get, the higher one. And there are people out there who are actually prepared to pay the premium to get a hold of those old bonds. So therefore, they're pushing their prices up a bit. We have seen this because, I mean, ever since SARB pause last year, we saw a substantial swing in bonds, which were trailing equities. I mean, they actually closed 2023 up 8% when you compare to equities, which was up 7%. So that's like a 1% difference, which is huge.
Yeah.
So one of the major reasons now this year we are seeing bonds slow a bit is the fact that there's still a higher for longer message. I think a lot of your listeners, you would have heard this phrase a lot, coming through from central banks, keeping rates high as they still want inflation to cool a bit more. So SARB is looking for inflation to be at least close to the midpoint of their 3-6 range. And at the moment, it's still above 5%. So it's still a waiting game.
Yeah, but it's still a waiting game. And one of them is the Namibian bond, which you guys at Satrix have. And it keeps on popping up onto my radar as one of the better performing ETFs locally. And it's an interesting story because I think as South Africans, we disregard Namibia. But as an economy, it's doing quite well. That bond is yielding close on 10%. And in the note you put out, you made the point that as they're growing, they need less debt requirement. They issue less bonds. This actually creates extra demand for those existing bonds.
True. Namibia is quite an interesting case, and consideration for it needs to be given in terms of their growth prospects and not really much on the interest rate cycle we see right now or we're about to see. I mean, they are seeing their deficit decelerating compared to their history, which can actually squeeze the supply of bonds issuance in the country, pushing their price a bit. So the country's growth has been driven primarily by its mining sector and favorable commodity prices as well. And there's oil and gas exploration there. So it's quite an exciting economy to look at. What is interesting, though, is that in Namibia, if you want to get exposure to their bonds and you sit outside the country, you can get exposure, but it's via scrip settlement, sort of like a materialized process. But what Cetrix has done is give investors an opportunity to actually get exposure to NAM bonds through our locally listed Namibian bond ETF. Yeah.
Making it, as you said, nice and simple and tax-free. I'll touch on tax-free in a moment. I was also looking at your global aggregate bond ETF. And I mean, I hadn't really looked into much into global bonds, partly because I still think of global as, you know, practically 0% rates. That, of course, has changed since the pandemic. It's what, 18% US and 10% Japan. Often when I look at global equities, US is sitting at 50-60%, but in the bond space, they're actually much smaller.
Yeah. So if you're looking at, for instance, this global, Cetrix Global Aggregate Bond ETF, I mean, if you're thinking of going offshore, this is the product that we have on the global bond side, which tracks the Bloomberg Global Aggregate Index. Now, this is an index that's got quite a long list of names, which is why you'll see US as 18%. I mean, you've got over 9,000 odd names covered by the index. You're looking at US treasuries to Japan government debt. You're looking at Europe. There's also an emerging markets in there. So this is, of course, also a play with the benefit of crossing the currencies. So in an environment where you might get good bond returns and a weak currency, you get the double dose of returns in the investment. So it's a nice place to actually look at in terms of where you want to be if you want to go for offshore bonds.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A last question. I mean, we've been talking bonds. One of the trick with bonds, of course, is they pay coupons. They're effectively their income. They get taxed as such. They fit perfectly in a tax-free account. I mean, this is almost, I mean, I have lots in there, but a bond in a tax-free account just seems to fit almost hand in glove.
100%. I mean, investors always need to pay tax. Unfortunately, everyone from their gains and, and income from their investments. So, and bonds receive coupons, which is looked at as an income on a statement. So, and it's subjected to tax. So the tax-free savings account actually takes care of this, as it's the way for investors to try and limit their tax impact on their investment. So bonds can also be good to be considered as instruments to be held in the tax-free savings account.
We'll leave it there. That's Sia Nemanja. He is Quantitative Portfolio Manager, Cetrix. Appreciate the time.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.